those of you that don't know me yet, I'm Larry Collins. I teach geology at San Fernando Valley State College during the rest of the year, and this year I've been up here most of the summer. And any time that you catch me around, if you've got a rock or something you want to know about, I just come up and ask me, and I'll do the best I can for you. What I'm going to do today is to talk about waves and erosion along the coast and try to give you an understanding of how the seacoasts evolve in the course of geologic time. Before we can talk about that, we need to talk about waves and how they're generated and some of the properties that they have. There's essentially two kinds of waves that we can talk about. One that you've probably heard of is called a tsunami. This is a Japanese word. These are generated when an earthquake occurs. This is the ocean basin with the water on top of it. If the ocean floor should drop during an earthquake along a fault somewhere, where the ocean floor drops 20 feet, when that occurs, naturally the ocean has to drop 20 feet to that same place. And as soon as that happens, then the ocean, this generates a wave which is 20 feet high, which then has to spread across the ocean to level the water out again. This type of wave is known to travel between 400 and 500 miles an hour. And when it comes into the shoreline, the configuration of the coast may often build this wave up to as high as 100 feet high. And when an earthquake occurs, this generates a shaking of the Earth's crust, which then disturbs some man-made instruments we call seismographs. And very often, within about 20 minutes or 10 minutes, people who are at the seismograph stations can pinpoint exactly where the earthquake is and know the rate of speed at which it travels, and they can alert cities that they're going to expect a tsunami coming in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or wherever it happens to be. Sometimes they have some concern as to whether to alert the people or not, because the people get all excited about this tsunami coming in, and they all rush down to the dock to watch it come in, and they all get their cameras ready, and lo and behold, here comes a 100-foot wave, and they discover they can't run 400 miles an hour. And they lose a lot of people this way because they don't realize the real nature of these things. Now, sometimes they alert the people, and everybody evacuates the city and gets out. And it turns out that where the earthquake wave was generated and how it travels, the configuration of the ocean doesn't build up the wave, and so they evacuate the city for nothing, and it doesn't come in. And they do this four or five times, and at this point, they've cried wolf too many times, and the fifth time, nobody bothers to evacuate, and then they lose a few people that way. So, yes. Yes, back.
Are they able to tell what direction the wave is going to go by the seismograph?
When an earthquake occurs and it's recorded on a seismograph station, it is, they've got vibration, and then suddenly the needle take. They can tell on the spacing of these things that at this particular earthquake station, seismograph station, that the earthquake was somewhere in a radius there. And you get another seismograph station, and this one knows that it's somewhere in the radius here, and you get a third one, and they know that it's in the radius there, and by three stations you know where it is. That pinpoints where it happens to be out in the ocean. And then from that point it will radiate out, and so they can tell which direction it's going to come in from. They may be able to tell on past experience whether one on that particular side is likely to build one up, which is dangerous. All right, that is one type of wave, which is uncommon, but does occur. The other kind of waves are generated by wind, And it's just a question of the wind blowing across the surface of water, which builds up a force, which, because of the friction of the wind on the water, begins to pile, push the water up in the mounds. And so we begin to get waves generated as the wind blows across the surface in terms of friction. The size of waves that you can generate is a function of the velocity of the wind that's blowing. It's a function of the length of the water which you blow across. This is sometimes referred to as the fetch. You'll find that if you're on a lake and you're on the downwind side, the wind blowing toward you, the waves will be fairly high up on the beach, but if you go on the opposite side of the lake, they'll just be little tiny things. It's the wind blowing across the lake, the lake that generates it. Because of this, you'll find that waves on, let's say, Lake Michigan maybe get as high as 10 to 20 feet high or something like that. If you go to the Mediterranean, they may get up around 30 feet, get a longer fetch here. If you get to the Atlantic Ocean, they get up around 40 to 45 feet. Pacific Ocean being much larger still, you can generate 50 or 60 foot waves, depending on the length of the fetch. And it also depends upon the duration of time in which the wind is blowing. The longer the time the wind blows, the more it builds up. Now, I should also mention here that you can also generate waves in a tub of water or something like this by dropping a pebble on the surface, and where the pebble hits, then you generate a force, and the waves are generated which radiate out from that center of force. And this is a free oscillation wave that radiates out, hits the shoreline, rebounds off, and it's just an oscillation wave. The windblown waves are a combination of an oscillation wave plus a transverse wave, in which the water, I suppose I ought to just back up a minute and relate to you what an oscillation wave is. If I would put a cork on top of the wave here and watch a wave train and this wave crest go by, and watch what happens to that cork in the passage of an oscillation wave, this cork will generate a circular motion. And I'm going to put a series of circles of a certain diameter across here. And the crest of the wave, or the trough of the wave, and the crest of the wave over here are the relationship of the diameter of the circle. When the cork is in this position here, as the wave train is coming by, as this wave portion here is traveling here, it lifts the cork. So by the time that the wave is in this position, the cork is on its way up on the circular mantle, and when the wave is in this position right here, the cork is right here. By the time you're at the top of the wave, the cork is there, and as the wave goes by, it begins to, let's see, I don't have the same relationship here, the same slope. The cork is in that position, and so on, so that as this wave goes by, the cork then moves up to the top of the wave here, and then as the wave goes by, then it goes down the back side of the wave and comes back down to its starting point. So that the motion then of the wave, I'm putting four different positions of the wave. When the wave is right here, it's at the top. When the wave has just gone by, it's there. When the wave is there, the cork is here. And when the wave is coming up, I guess it would be, lost my position here. I guess it would be right there when it's on its way up. And here it's coming down, and here it's backing up. So that you can, if you could get a picture of a cork from a side view, the cork would go in a circular motion as this wave goes by.
In relationship to the ground, then, it is not moving?
It's not moving at all. Now, if you've been down to a beach and gone into the waves, you can get a sense of this. As a wave comes toward you, you're pulled toward the wave, you're lifted up by the wave and slammed toward the shore. And it's this circular motion that's generated. Now, when the wave gets into the shore, I might also point out before I go on, this circular motion is continuous in depth, but the size of the diameter is less. And is the circular motion, if you could put a cork down here that would float below the water, it would also move in a circular motion. But as you went further and further down, the circular motion would become less and less. And if you have done skin diving or this sort of thing, and you're down here a few feet down, the waves toss you to and fro because of this passage of the water in a circular manner. Now, if the waves come into a shoreline, and let me put a shoreline here where the beach comes up, then this circular motion infringes upon the beach, and the friction here slows down the wave, and the upper portion of the wave is still going full tilt, and the bottom portion of the wave can't keep up with it, and as a result then, this circular wave here tends to break and spill forward in the form of breakers or waves that we call waves that break up on the beach. And this breaks up and washes up on the beach, then all this water runs down the surface, which it then infringes upon the next wave coming in and causes friction and causes it to break. And this water rushing down here on large waves is called undertow. And this could be a rather forceful. You get huge volumes of water sometimes breaking up, and all this water rushing down the slope is pretty hard to maintain your feet. There is another phenomenon called a dip tide or rip current. I've had a little experience with this. Off the coast of California, where I live, Zuma Beach, some of you are familiar with it, and it's a beach. This is land here, and this is the ocean out here. And it's a somewhat embayed coastline there. And offshore from here are some buried sandbars, which you can't see. So that in a profile view, here's the shoreline and the beach here, and the water is in here. Off coast here are some sandbars that stick up below water, which you can't see. The waves come in over the top of this sandbar, and at certain times of the day, when sea level is a little bit lower, at low tide, the waves then infringe upon the sandbar, which is buried. Actually, I've swum out to this thing and stood up there, and you can stand up and you're about waist deep. But the waves coming over the top of this, the water washing in here constantly, the water can't get out, and so it begins to pile up behind this sandbar, so that you begin to pile up a lot of water higher than the level of the ocean. And after a period of time, there's enough water built up here that it builds up pressure, and the water then suddenly builds up momentum and goes out through an opening between the sandbar in a big rush. And my wife and I were swimming out here in the deep water, having a grand time. We put our towels and stuff out here, and we've been swimming about 15, 20 minutes, enjoying ourselves, constantly looking up to see if anybody's running off with our towels. And then suddenly we looked up and we were sailing along the beach at about 50 miles an hour. Not that fast, but we were really being carried along. And the waves were getting all rockety, and we could just swim as hard as we could. There wasn't anything we could do. And the Coast Guard come along, and a couple of divers dove in and with fins on and pulled us into land. Now, I knew what was going on as soon as it happened, but I had never had the experience of it. And I was prepared to swim parallel to the coast until it had run its course, and then I was ready to swim in. There's no point in, if you fight it, then you just wear yourself out.
But wouldn't it have been coming from the other direction?
No, it would have gone along here and then carried us out. All I would hope to do would be to stay parallel to the shore.
But it wouldn't be coming from this. It's not this type of a thing.
No, it's where it occurs here is just a rushing out through the opening.
Oh, just from the one direction.
or it may have come from the other side too. But at any rate, of course, they're quite concerned there that they get a weak swimmer if they don't get him out of there. And he'll drown because he'll wear himself out. But it was really rough water. So.
But is it in their waist? Did they happen that they were right on the spot? Or?
Yeah, they have the Coast Guard and the boats there constantly. They usually pull in 30, 40 people a day. So. Okay, now the waves as they come into the coastline have the properties, the oscillation waves, of course, the water is just going in circular motion. In the ocean, the combination of the wind with this, there is a little bit of translation, so that if you put a cork on the ocean wave, it not only goes in a circular pattern, but there is a little translation of it, and the cork may migrate. But in a pond, if you ever lose your hat in a pond and you want to get it back, you start making waves. All the hat does is go up and down in a circular motion. You want it to come to shore, you have to start shoving water at it to get a current, you see. Otherwise, the waves won't do you a bit of good. It'll just move in a certain motion. All right. If we have a tub full of water, and waves are coming in, and they hit that shoreline, and we look from an aerial view now, if this is a wave coming in, and these are the crests of the waves, when it gets to the shore, maybe I should make these in the circular waves and just drop a pebble in the pool and generate some ripples to come out. When this ripple hits the shoreline, it will reflect and bounce off, just like sound waves. So you get reflection, and I'm sure you've seen this 100 times. You also get the phenomenon not only of reflection, but refraction. And let me show you what refraction is. This is an aerial view, and I'm going to use a technique of taking a muddy field. This is usually the simple way of doing it. And picture this surrounded by concrete pavement, and that we have a line of soldiers, which I'm going to represent as the crest of the wave. And these soldiers are marching across the pavement at a certain speed, and we have several of them all lined up like this, and these are the crests of the waves, okay? But you can picture them as a line of soldiers. And they come to this muddy field, and some of these soldiers at this point have to step into the mud, and they can't keep up with the rest of them. They get bogged down. Whereas those who are still out here in the concrete can still walk forward at their normal speed. So that you get a change in direction to the front of the wave or the soldiers, and by the time these get here, the rest of these people are there. And then as they march across the field, they're a little bit spaced closer together until they get at this point, and then the soldiers can step out on the concrete again and go ahead at their normal speed. Like that, okay? So that the direction of the wave, the train, is changed while they go across the field. And this change in direction slowing down is referred to as refraction. Now let me show how this happens in waves now. Let's take a tank full of water, and at this point, put a submerged block below the water such that this is deep water over here, this is shallow water there, and that's deep water there. Okay? So that now waves coming across here like this, where the waves impinge upon this shallow water, there is a refraction and a slowing up so that the spacing between the crest becomes shorter here. And from an aerial view, you can picture the same thing that I showed you in the previous diagram. You get a change in direction wherever it happens to be shallow. Okay? But the waves slow down and pile up on each other, and the crests get a little bit higher. And then when they go across, get back into deep water, then they can lengthen out and shorten up.
This is quite advantageous when you're traveling rivers that have shallow spots when you try to find the the eye of the channel.
That's right. You can see where the...
Know where to go.
You know where to go with the refraction. Okay. Now, waves also have the property of interference. And I will spell the rest of this out. That is, if you have waves which are generated in one part of the ocean and are spreading out from that point, and waves in another part of the ocean which are spreading out of that point, somewhere they're going to meet. And where they meet, they interfere with each other. So that if you have a wave in one part of the ocean which is coming in here, you have another wave that's generated that's coming in a slightly longer wave or something like that, these waves will interfere with each other either constructively or destructively. Now, if they both happen to be coming in about the same place at the same time, the force of one wave will add to the force of the other wave and make the wave twice as high and twice as deep. Okay, the forces will add. If the waves happen to be coming in so that they're trying to do the opposite effect, then the force of this going up and the force of that going down cancel each other out, and you have no waves at all. Now, it turns out that you've got waves generated in many, many parts of the ocean, all of different wavelengths and sizes and speeds. And so as you stand on the shoreline, the waves for a period of time are constructively adding to each other, and they tend to build up. And they get higher and higher, and there's a wives' tale that every seventh wave is the big one, you see. Well, it might be the seventh or eighth or the ninth or whatever the condition is on how these things are traveling. And then there will be a period of time in which it will tend to die out, and they'll be interfering with each other, you see, and canceling each other out. So this is the people who do surfing are waiting for the big ones to come in, and they'll ride those a bit, and there'll be a period of time. All right. When the waves impinge upon a cliff, then, there are essentially two forces going on as these things come in. One is just a question of taking 50,000 tons of water and just ramming it up into a cliff. Now, you can picture this as happening every few seconds, like taking a train, backing it up 30 miles an hour and ramming into the cliff and backing it up again for another second and ramming it into the cliff. This compaction literally will tear these cliffs apart. You may have some joints or fracture patterns in here, and the water and air gets into here. And the air at one instance is one atmosphere pressure. Then you get 50 tons of water coming in there and compresses that air up to maybe several tons of, there's several hundred atmospheres of pressure. And so you're constantly going from one atmosphere to several hundred atmospheres of pressure. And literally, sometimes large blocks of rock will literally explode out of the cliff. You finally weaken it to the point where the compression of the air just kablooey and the whole rock comes apart. Or you may have seen large jets of water coming, some huge jet out of the cliff. And the compressed air through an opening here and just sends up enormous spray up through a hole there. So this compaction and pounding on the cliff will tear it apart. Then you have the phenomenon of corrosion, a chemical weathering in which the seawater reacts with the rock and dissolves it and loosens up the material. In addition to this, you have corrasion, in which the waves coming into the shoreline here pick up the sand and gravel here, and this circular motion churns it up, and then it will throw the sand and gravel up against the cliff. So if you can picture rocks and sand being thrown against the cliff at the same time, then this abrasion grinding action will wear the cliff away. Now, to convince you of the force of this, very commonly along the shoreline, here's your beach, you will find pebbles up on the beach here, maybe 30 or 40 feet up from where the high tide level is, and this will be nice sand here. And then you'll have pebbles and gravel right here where the water is breaking, and then you have sand out here again. Where the waves are coming in right here at the beach, the churning action tends to wash out the finer silt and leave behind the coarser material right here. So if you've gone out in the ocean, as you wade out and you step off right into the water, you get into the sand and gravel and it hurts your feet, and you quickly try to get through that to get into the softer sand out here. But these pebbles up here, where do they come from? These are referred to as storm pebbles or storm beach. And a very heavy storm, the churning action of the waves here, with large waves breaking forward like this, picks up the sand and boulders and gravels there, and this breaking will throw these pebbles
up on the land,
and they'll just come flying out of there.
And at that period of time is rather dangerous to be down the beach if you're in a heavy storm. You probably wouldn't be there anyway.
Now, you may not think that this is really too much, but let me give you an example. I know of a lighthouse which was 132 feet high. The light up here,
132 feet would probably be four times as high as this room right here. Give you maybe even five times as high. During a hurricane off the coast, Atlantic coast,
a boulder weighing 150 pounds,
and I guess as that would be something about like that,
was thrown high enough and fell vertically through the roof of
the lighthouse and broke the light. Now, if I can't convince you about the force of waves and breaking up, this little story can do it.
All right. Now, in addition to the waves coming in, this is the ocean out here, an aerial view of the land. Usually waves don't come in straight onto the shore, but they tend to come in at an angle, so that waves coming in meet the shore somewhat
in an angular position.
When the wave hits here, it washes up on the shore and on the beach there. And at this point, the wave doesn't run right back down to where it started from, but it washes up and comes back down here. Okay? It just runs right, essentially straight down. If there is a particle of sand or gravel or a piece of wood, it will be picked up, washed up here, and then as the wave retreats, comes down here. The next wave comes in, picks it up, washes it down here. Next wave comes in, picks it up, moves it down there. So we have what is essentially a long shore current. And you do this over geologic time, and you can transport material a long way along the coast. And I know of situations where there was a garnet schist, which has little tiny garnet crystals in here, and it's a unique rock that only occurs at one place along the shore. And garnet crystals have been washed along the shore here as much as 40, 50 miles, and you can find garnet crystals all the way down there where the longshore currents have moved the sand.
Watching my notes up here to cover everything.
All right. Now, I want at this point, yes.
I was wondering about the erosion. Well, does that mean you, the development of beaches then?
Yes. This is what I'm going to get into now, as to how we develop beaches and how a shoreline will change.
Before we leave waves.
Yes.
Sometimes, at least it seems to be, waves coming from two directions.
This could very likely be. What they'll do, they'll interfere with each other and combine and into one wave. But you, the phenomena of interference, if you have a wave which is generated from a point that is dropping a pebble in the pool, when that wave hits here, it will rebound and come off like this, okay? Where are those places where you get the rebounding wave, where the crest meets the crest here, you're going to have constructive interference and you're going to have twice the height. Where a crest here meets the trough here, you're going to have interference and it'll essentially be level water. Where the trough of this wave meets the trough of the other wave, then you're going to have a doubly deep hole. And you'll get the appearance of some air mattresses where you get the dimples
in it. You'll have high points and dimples. This is the surface kind of condition that you get, or you get deep holes and large
mountains. And indeed, that you ever have two different points in the sea from which waves emanate.
Yes. That is, you may have a storm in this part of the ocean and a storm in that part of the ocean, and they're both generating their own waves of different sizes, of different wavelengths, different velocities, and these will spread out from that point. Okay.
Larry, what's the difference between corrasion and abrasion?
Oh, it's the same thing. Sand and gravel will abrade the coat. $1.25 word for
all right.
Let me just show you what happens in a general way when waves are breaking up on the shore. And what I'm going to do is to take a flat surface below sea level and give you the most radical thing that can occur and have an earthquake occur in which this portion of the land here is folded up out of the ocean so that this went up as that went down, relatively speaking. And the ocean comes up against a flat cliff. That's as radical as I can get. What happens now as the waves come in and pound up against that cliff? This is where your greatest force is generated, where these impact. It's like a train coming in and pounding on this. And you're going to begin to cut a notch right into the side of the cliff here, sometimes referred to as a nip, and to cut into here and undercut the cliff. When this occurs, of course, you may cut far enough under here that you overcome the strength of the rock, or you get to a joint and the cliff then falls off down into the water. And this will, all this rubble will begin to accumulate down here as it breaks loose. And these waves then will begin to constantly cut in here, keep undercutting the cliff, breaking up the rocks, grinding them up, making sand, and transporting this material and dumping it out off the coast here. So we begin to cut this back continually, and the material that's ground up then is transported by the agitation of the waves and dumped out here and built up out in this direction. So you get here what is referred to as a wave cut platform. And the wave continues grinds across here, grinding out that rock, undercutting the cliff, grinding up the rocks, making sand, and the coarse stuff and heavy stuff tends to stay and make the beach, whereas the finer stuff tends to be transported out and build out here to build out what is referred to as a wave-built platform. Okay. If you do this through geologic time, you may build this thing out for several miles, and it becomes known as the continental shelf. And for the Atlantic coast, this is built out to almost 100 miles in some places. And the slope of this surface, it drops about 10 feet per mile, which is a very shallow slope. And it goes out to the point where, let's see, try this again. Here's the ocean level. Here's the continental shelf, and this distance might be 100 miles, dropping at the rate of about 10 feet per mile, until it gets out here to the point, wherever it happens to be, where the depth is about 600 feet, about 100 fathoms. At that point, you have what we call the continental slope, and it goes down about 10 times as fast, but it's still about 100 feet per mile. Is still a pretty shallow slope, and then drops off. Why 600 feet? It turns out that the biggest waves in the Atlantic Ocean that you can generate, the circular motion as you go down in depth, the biggest waves will agitate water to a depth of about 600 feet, so that you can transport material out as long as you can agitate the water. Beyond that point, there's no circular motion or agitation. Can't transport it any further. So the waves carry things out to that point and then dump it down the slope, and that's how it builds up. Okay.
How do you account in this process for the contour of the slope? How far does that continue? When you wait out on the beach, you wait out for 1 or 2 feet, and it'll come up to about 1 foot, and you go down about 3 feet, and you come up to about a foot and a half, and you go down about 4 feet.
I can show you how this might occur. Let me talk some more about this, and then we'll come back to your question. All right. What I would like to start with you now is a concept of what we'll call old age surface. And there's practically no place in the world right now in which this occurs. It is, at the present geologic time, there's more land sticking up out of the water than there probably has ever been in the past. And the streams are now actively trying to erode everything back down to sea level. If I could have an old age surface, it would be a surface in which practically everything's down to sea level, practically no hills sticking up, just a few sluggish streams trying to flow down a very slight surface to get down the ocean. Everything would be just about level. What I want you to picture now from an aerial view is this is the ocean with a large continental shelf built out here, a rather gentle surface here with sluggish meandering streams coming down here to a delta and just barely draining the surface, with a few isolated hills sticking up here which haven't yet been eroded away. At this point, the ocean and the shoreline are probably in equilibrium. It is at this point the waves have eroded back on the cliff so that they've cut a wave-cut platform which is very, very long, and all the waves can do is to work their way up to that beach, and by the time they've dragged all the way across this wave-cut platform and got to the beach, they're just barely breaking, have no energy left to erode the shore. We're in equilibrium now, okay? If I'm going to start with equilibrium on an old age surface, which everything's just about down to sea level, and now I'm going to disrupt that, okay? I'm going to either lower the land surface so that we submerge the surface, or by some process raise the water level so it floods over the surface. Now, these are relative things. At any rate, I want to drown the coast, okay? So that the land goes down, the ocean floods the crowd across here, and we flood up the valleys and we drown the hills that occur here, so that our whole coastline now is changed so that our coastline looks like this. And here's the ocean, and these are promontories of hills which are drowned, which are sticking out in the ocean. And in the valleys here, the streams are coming down now out of the mountains or the hills that stick out as promontories out in the ocean. Now what happens to the coastline? How does it evolve? Off the coast here, we have some shallow water where the ocean comes in around these hills, as we have slopes out here, all right? And if I give you a profile view here, here is the hill sticking out as a promontory, and here's the ocean which floods up the valley. Where the ocean impinges upon this promontory, it begins to cut in here to form cliffs, okay? As it erodes on the cliff here. Now at this point, I need to, supposing we have some waves which are coming into the shoreline in this manner. Where the wave hits the shallow water here, it's going to be slowed down. And it can't go as fast as a wave which is out here in deep water, which can go at full speed. So where the wave hits shallow water, it has to be slowed down. Can't keep up with the wave here. This wave here, still going full speed out in the deep water, is slowed down at this point, like that, you see? And if I would continue this, the deep water out here, it's going full speed, but in here, shallow water, it's slowed down. Notice how the wave front is changed so that this wave here, starting in here, turns and comes in toward the shore. This wave here, coming this way, turns and comes in toward the shore.
that energy is being concentrated right into the promontory where it's sticking out here. So that you're taking a tremendous force, pulling it in, turning it by refraction into the promontory, and at this point you're going to have the maximum amount of erosion. Whereas in here, the wave coming in this way gets spread out. So that the wave coming in this way and that way, the energy is spread out into the shallow area and less force, and so you get less erosion here in the bay. So all the energy then is concentrated on this promontory sticking out in the ocean, and you begin to cut a cliff and to erode the promontory. This breaks up the rock, generates sand and gravel, and the churning action of the wave may throw some of this sand up onto the cliff and build up a beach. And so you develop a beach here at the foot of the cliff, as well as the wave-built platform. All right. So in terms of geologic time, in the mark piece of chalk and Newton, you're going to be eroding back these promontories, grinding up the rock, generating sand, which forms a beach out here at the foot of the cliff. And if there is enough sand and gravel generated, and you build out your platform, wave-built platform, the longshore currents coming along here will tend to drift some of the sand, and you'll then begin to develop what we call spits, little sandbars that stick out from the edge of the promontory. And these spits will, if the longshore currents are consistently in one direction, they'll stick off the promontories on the same side of the coast. If you have coming in from both directions, you'll have spits on both sides of the promontories. These are sometimes referred to as winged headlands, wings sticking out. If you erode continually more and get down to this point, you may reach a point where you erode back, generate enough sand that the spits go clear across, and you have a sandbar which closes the bay here, and this then becomes no longer a bay, but it becomes a lagoon. Notice at this point I've straightened the coast out. It used to be very irregular. Now I've got a sandbar that goes clear across here. It's straightened it completely out, and we have a lagoon back here. All the time that this is going on, the streams are coming in here, dumping in their sediment, building out a delta here, and they're filling the lagoon in from the landward side. Same time, the promontories are being eroded down, and if you give enough time, we'll keep eroding this back, eroding the land down, we'll get back to a straight coastline, an old age surface, an old age streams, and we'll back where we started from. So this is how a coast which is submerged will slowly evolve. This is theoretical. I haven't lived long enough to ever see this happen. This is a very slow process, and when you go down the ocean, you can see this process going on. But it probably takes 100,000, 200,000 years for this thing to see. Most of the Atlantic coast from New Jersey down is not this type. The main coast, which is a very bold and bayed coast with a lot of fjord-like, the ocean, it is the coastline has been drowned. This is this type of coast. Now this is how this will theoretically evolve. Okay, now let me go back and show you the other alternative, and then we'll be ready to look at pictures. Allow me to go back to my straight coastline, which is in equilibrium with an old age surface, with a few low-lying hills here and a sluggish stream coming down, a continental shelf. And now instead of submerging this, let's emerge this coastline out of the water so that we raise part of the continental shelf up out of the ocean. All right? Okay, now I'm going to give you a profile view here. Here's the depth of 600 feet, here's the continental slope, here's the continental shelf. The first alternative I gave you is that we raised the ocean level and we flooded way back in. Now what I'm going to do is raise the land level so that the ocean level goes down
and it goes down, let's say, 300 feet. Okay, so that we dropped the ocean level this amount, and now this depth down here is 300 feet rather than 600 feet. All right? And when this occurs, the seacoast is now here. We raise the land out or lower the water, and the seacoast is now there, and we emerge the continental shelf here. Notice we end up with a straight coastline, essentially. We don't have a bold and bay coast. All we're doing is just raising that flat surface we call the continental shelf a little bit out of the water, and we still end up with a straight coastline. But now the waves coming in, with a wave base of 600 feet, impinge upon the continental shelf, and they begin to cut into the continental shelf as if it were sticking out of the water, and cut into it like it were a cliff, and to cut a new wave cut bench on the continental shelf. And this material here will be dumped down the ocean to build up the continental shelf again. The churning action tends to throw some of this sand that's in the continental shelf ahead of it, and so it piles it up here, and we get a sandbar that eventually emerges out of the water here. Here, then, we have a sandbar sticking up and a new continental shelf being developed out here, and this is referred to as a barrier bar. And this barrier bar may be as much as 20 or 30 miles off the coast, and this is typical of the Atlantic coast from New Jersey down to Florida, where you get these offshore bars. And behind this barrier bar, then you have a quiet water which is protected from the ocean. And this is referred to as a lagoon back here. Okay? That's right. This is also typical of the Texas coast too. This is a nice straight coastline. And you have these offshore barrier bars.
Okay?
That's right, you're relatively safe. This is quiet water. The barrier bar is protected. Now, these barrier bars often get fairly large. Some of them was half a mile across. And people who have lots of money go out and build expensive resort homes out on these things, and they're right along the ocean and pay lots of money and live out there. But in terms of geologic time, what's going to happen? And it's happened within our recent time, so I show you. These waves are continually cutting into that barrier bar, eroding that surface, dumping the material out here to build a new continental shelf, try to get back to equilibrium. In hurricane storms, they tend to wash over the top of this thing, dump material back here, and move the barrier bar toward the beach. So that progressively the barrier bar is being shifted toward the beach. And I didn't really believe that this happened until about 10 years ago when they had a high tide in combination with one of the hurricanes, and they moved some of these barrier bars, which are a half a mile to a mile across, as much as a quarter mile inland. In one storm. It may not happen but once every 50 to 100 years. But in terms of geologic time, these huge storms with 50 to 60 foot waves plus high tide, they just go right over the top of these barrier bars.
There are many houses on that bar, right?
Yes, they lost a lot of houses.
That'd be like you're moving sand down in Southern California from the wind.
That's right. So that in terms of geologic time, then this barrier bar is going to move forward. It's going to fill up the lagoon. You're going to reestablish this continental shelf in equilibrium with the ocean again. At the same time, the streams are draining off of this, dumping their sediment in, building up deltas and filling up the lagoon from the landward side. So landward it's being filled in, ocean side it's being filled in. And eventually we're going to cut this back until we move the barrier bar all the way into the shore, straighten this whole thing out and reestablish the continental shelf again. And when this occurs, then the waves will expend all their energy just getting up to the shore, barely breaking up, and a little erosion.
Well, then, as I understand what you're saying, you seem to have the most marked changes at the time when the glacier was rising.
rises or lowers.
That's right.
You get a shift in altitude.
Then you destroy the equilibrium, and the ocean then has to reestablish it.
And if the surface were to remain static, you'd end up with nice smooth.
You'd end up with a nice, smooth, straight coast with barely any energy. Now, I don't know of any shoreline in the present ocean which is in equilibrium. This is partly because the ocean has, in the last 100,000 years, the glacial ice, which was once all across the continent, has melted, and the ocean level has come up 300 feet. And so we've got a whole new shoreline that it has to work on. So it's just getting started.
In the northern section of the Mediterranean, pretty much in equilibrium there.
I don't really think so, but we may be talking about not the same places. Yes.
I couldn't hear his question, but I was wondering if you had information on the rate at which water is rising at the present time.
I think it's coming up something like. 1/100th of an inch a year or something like this, so that 100 years it comes up an inch. At this rate, New York City is going to be drowned. Yeah, that's true. Of course, here Florida is also the coastline. The land itself is coming up, so you may get a balance there. I might point out to you that if this is the United States now from aerial view, and that's Florida, and here's Maine up here. Because there was a large mass of ice up here 100,000 years ago, about 10 miles thick, this is a tremendous weight on the land surface. This weight depressed the crust. Now that the ice has melted away, the crust is rebounding and coming up. And this rebounding, if this is the Great Lakes here, and this is Lake Michigan. The northern part of Lake Michigan is coming up faster than the southern part, because here's where most of the weight is. This is tilting Lake Michigan Basin so that the water is being piled up down at the lower end. This is coming up faster than down here. And you can see the old shorelines along the coast which are being raised up out of the ocean. And people who have had houses built down at the shoreline, some of them have been actually eroded out by the waves that are coming in. And in terms of geologic time, Lake Michigan is going to spill out and drain out to the south eventually. Yes?
Yeah, there's a great deal of concern about San Francisco Bay. Mm-hmm. If you go in the shoreline, creating more property.
Yes?
Currently, suppose it's slowing down. Can you comment on that or guide them?
I can show you some of the problems. I'm not familiar with San Francisco. I mean, the things that you can do that will cause trouble. For example, here might be a coastline with a river coming in at this point, which they're using as a harbor or something like this. And let's say there's a certain amount of longshore current, sand which tends to drift over and close up the harbor, whatever it happens to be. So the engineers decide to put some groins out here, barriers out here, to catch this sand, to pile it up here so it doesn't get over and close up the harbor. Okay, they make this study, and they put the groins in, and it does catch the sand. And the harbor stays clear. But one of the problems that they have to be worried about is whether the longshore current is consistently from the same direction. Because now that you put the groin in here and stop this sand, the waves coming down here, which used to be loaded with sand now, can soon wash out all the sand that's here. Now it can begin to erode into this coast because they have nothing that they have to carry. They can now use their force to work on the ocean. So it strips all the sand here. Now, if the current, as it does along the Pacific coast, it is half the year you get currents coming down from the north to the south, then it reverses to the south and the change of season goes the other way. The ocean coming here, now with all this sand stripped away, the waves can really erode into here, and they've lost as much as a half a mile of coast there and just ripped everything out. The waves had nothing to stop it. So this is one problem. Now, if you dump a lot of sediment in there, this may add
friction to the waves, which then are slowed down, and this may cause more water to dump more of its load, and you may seal up the basin. So these are the problems that you have to contend with when you disrupt the way the ocean is eroding.
I think we had reference to the dumping of land, cutting away a hill, dumping it into the bay proper.
Oh, I see.
And from San Jose toward San Francisco, they're filling in.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, as soon as you add material to the ocean, you may add more than it can physically transport, and this will then cause the continental shelf to build out, and then you'll get shallower water, less erosion. You could get some problems. But I don't know enough about the situation, so I'm just guessing right now. All right, let's see. Have I said everything I was going to say? Why don't we
start? So the ocean's rising.
Yes, this is due to the fact that Greenland, the ice masses are melting slowly, and it's adding the water. I started to talk about the main coast here. I've got into the here. The main coast is also coming up out of the water, this rebound. And so even though it looks like a submerged coastline, it's now emerging. Coming up out of the water. Around about New Jersey, let's see, the Florida coast is going down relative to the main coast, which is coming up, and somewhere here you've got a place where it's neither going down or up, and you stay about equilibrium there. But at least in the main coast it's coming up, and Florida coast is slightly going down relative to the main coast.
Is this from the compression of the earth?
This is due to the compression of the earth across due to the way the ice that was up there. Yes?
Do you know anything about the dumping of the continents drifting either apart or separately, and how does this relate to what you're talking about?
This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about now. If I have time when I finish showing pictures, we'll go into it. Okay? Of course, the waves are constantly eroding the beaches, transporting this material out, and dumping it out on the continental shelf. So this may just be part of it. I don't have too many good pictures of shoreline. Close to California, you can see where we've got wave-cut cliffs here, where the ocean is pinching on the shore. What I haven't talked about are sea stacks, and these rocks sticking out are former parts of the land surface, which were more resistant than other parts, and they've just been left there as erosional remnants, as the waves have cut back up onto the shore here. Sometimes the waves get into cracks or fractures and will undercut, and you'll hit sea arches with water underneath the portion of it. This particular picture, where you see the flat top to the island sticking out there, that same flat surface that goes on the land area, what you're looking at is an older wave-cut platform. At one time, the ocean level was higher or the land surface is lower and the ocean cut back on there and cut a wave cut platform. The land surface has been uplifted here, perhaps 50 feet here, and that wave cut platform has been raised up out of the surface. And that the cycle that I described to you was interrupted before it was completed. The ocean is now cutting a new wave cut platform down here at the lower level, cutting into the land surface. So you're looking at some raised beaches there that have come up out of the ocean. Got two pictures on one here.
There's a marshmallow.
Yeah. You know my jokes, don't you?
Yeah.
This is at low tide there. You can see the wave cut platform where the waves are cutting into the cliff, and then where the houses are built there, you can see a higher wave cut platform when the ocean was quite a bit higher or the land surface was lower. This is a close-up view of a wave cut platform where the waves were cut across the rocks there at low tide. A wave cut cliff here with a platform at the base. Here are some dipping rocks along the coast, and the waves have cut across that surface, beveling those rocks off at the level that you see in the foreground. In the background, they're undercutting the cliff there and some softer rocks to form a sea cave. And eventually, we'll undercut the cliff there and fall down. In this picture, I'm showing you an old shoreline. It's 450 million years old. And the dark bluish gray rock at the bottom there are quartzites, which are metamorphic rocks, which are standing essentially vertical. On that quartzite, a Cambrian sea, about 450 million years ago, eroded up there and formed a beach. And those horizontal sands that you see on the left-hand side of the picture, which are white, is the old shoreline and the beach that developed on that quartzite. And you can see the profile where the waves have cut into that dark rock and developed the beach. These are the so-called White Cliffs of Dover. They're essentially limestones, and the ocean has cut into these along joint planes to develop sea stacks. And in some places, it's cut into weaker areas and formed sea arches that you can see there. Here is another sea stacks. More resistant rock, which are left there as the waves cut back. This is in Bay of Fundy area in Maine, where you have tremendous tides come in, as much as 20 or 30 feet high. When the tide changes, sometimes it comes into a wall of water about 3 feet high. It comes up 4 or 5 miles an hour right up the river. And the boat here in this position is sitting in the mud, and you have to have docks that will allow for the tide changes, and when the tide gets in, this is the way it looks. The tide generated a tremendous amount of erosion too. Whoops. This is an aerial view of a drowned coastline in Maine, where the ocean has drowned the hills here and gone up the valleys. Here is an aerial view of the barrier bar, the ocean on the left, the lagoon on the quiet water on the right, developed a few houses along here, but you can also see where streaks of sand go through there, and these are places where the ocean was broken through at some time and washed material over the backside of the buried bar. This would be, no, this is by nature, this isn't man-made. This is somewhere between New Jersey and Florida, and I'm not just quite sure. I got this from another friend. Here in the foreground, in the middle of the picture, you can see probably an old former beach there. We've had uplift and a new sandbar created, which has now migrated back to fill in the lagoon, and you can see the other beach. And I hear the bell ring, and I'll try to finish up here. I've only got about 4 or 5 more pictures. We'll stop. This is the lagoon there, a tidal inlet. See here in the foreground how sand is drifting from the upper part of the beach down across the right and is attempting to close the channel there where the river is draining out. These features here are plume scars where you get rip currents in the water and the ocean floor washing out some of the sediment and then being reburied. These are effects that we get on the ocean. These are fossils of snails which have been sorted by the waves and currents have all aligned them up in a parallel direction. Particular rocks are called turbidites. They happen when you get landslides on the ocean floor. When you get earthquakes down there and a portion of the continental shelf breaks loose and a landslide which is submerged and floods out across the bottom of the ocean floor. And the first portion that comes out is very coarse, and as the water quiets down and the finer stuff settles out. So you see at least evidence maybe for 20 different landslides there, a sequence of them. And then finally, an old sediment which was along a cliff which was being broken up by the waves and then redeposited off the coast. And you get this limestone conglomerate that occurs here, shell fragments. Rocks have been broken up by the waves and dumped out. And this is all that I have here today.